News. I'm Harley Carnes. The Lundberg Report confirms what you expected, another record high of gasoline. A national average $4 a gallon with predictions of another 20 to 25 cents soon. And people are not happy about this.
Everything you buy, from vegetables and eggs and so on and so forth, sky high. This is ridiculous.
You're not getting a pay raise. So you're really not going to be able to afford to go to work. You know, this is ridiculous.
The word of the day, perhaps. First Lady Laura Bush says if you need proof that things are changing in Afghanistan, check.
This morning I heard from women training.
On Tuesday, the Afghan government will be asking the nations of the UN to send billions for their building efforts. Laura Bush visited one orphanage for girls that also serves as a school teaching literacy and trying to create, they say, opportunity. The bad weather in the Midwest is dopplering across the air traffic control system. 400 flights canceled today out of O'Hare Airport in Chicago. Just one example. Water everywhere in Indiana.
Born and raised here, and this is the highest I've ever seen and the worst I've ever seen.
Scores of people have been evacuated in Indianapolis. In Columbus, Jim Bickle runs the regional hospital.
We have lost total power, our pharmacy, lab operations, supply, central sterile, and as well as our kitchen and food prep areas are all located in the basement, which are still totally all underwater.
One person drowned in the floods in Indianapolis. Another is missing. Floods in Michigan have killed two people. The astronaut spacewalk is done. Excellent news for those inside the space station.
The International Space Station's cooling system now has a new nitrogen tank to keep it running. Spacewalker Ron Garan carried the refrigerator-sized assembly as he rode the end of the station's robot arm.
I don't know if it's more fun for you to be up there doing that or for us to be down here watching you do it.
Probably up here.
He and partner Mike Fossum spent more than 6.5 hours outside working on the station's new Kibo lab and solar array assembly as well. They completed all of their planned tasks and four more that were added on to maximize their spacewalking time. Peter King, CBS News at the Kennedy Space Center.
Six people in a single-engine Cessna are dead after the plane crashed in Fremont, Ohio. No damage to people or buildings on the ground.
The plane took off towards the east and for an unknown reason crashed shortly after takeoff into a residential area on the west side of the city of Fremont.
Ohio State Patrol Sergeant Matt Crow says too soon to know what brought that plane down. Similar story in Huntsville, Texas, but it's a helicopter. Four people are dead. A medical helicopter went in a national forest between Huntsville and Houston. The cause unknown. This is CBS News.
Make your pet a star. Enter the Valley Animal Center's 2009 calendar contest. Just send in a photo of your furry friend along with a $10 registration fee before July 31st. All photos will be used in the full-color wall calendar, but only 12 photographs will be chosen to represent each month of the year. All money raised will help the Valley's Pet Overpopulation Program and to support the dogs and cats in the no-kill shelter. For an entry form or for more information, call the Valley Animal Center at 233-8690.
Did you know that Geico insures more than cars? No, it's true. They cover tons of other things like hot air balloons, unicycles and roller skates. Nah, I'm just messing with you. But Geico can help insure lots of other vehicles though, like motorcycles, RVs, ATVs, personal watercraft, boats and pogo sticks. Nah, I'm only kidding about the pogo sticks, but seriously, just so there's no confusion, Geico now offers insurance on more than just your car.
Geico, saving you money on insurance for your car and the other stuff that moves you. Visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
I have cash loungeophobia, or fear of money just sitting there. When Bank of the West offered Best of the West checking, I knew I'd be okay. With it, I earn interest, with no monthly service charge. That's great for my lunar monetary phobia, fear of monthly fees.
Open Best of the West checking with direct deposit today at Bank of the West. You'll earn 2.00 annual percentage yield guaranteed to October 31st, 2008 with no minimum balance required. Add a debit card and you'll also get a free Best of the West discovery guide from the creators of Sunset Magazine. Plus, you could win one of five fabulous getaways.
That'll help my not-at-lastia-phobia.
Huh?
Fear of traveling without a guidebook.
Bank of the West, member FDIC. Limited time offer. Conditions and restrictions apply. Sweepstakes ends on June 30th, 2008. No purchase or account necessary to enter. Sweepstakes not available in all states and some restrictions apply. See branch or visit bankofthewest.com/bestofthewest for official rules and details, including prize values and estimated odds of winning. Travel must be completed by May 31st, 2009. Void where prohibited.
This is Hometown Heroes. Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580. KMJ.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, coming to you each and every Sunday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com. Anywhere in the world, 24 hours a day, you can look up past podcasts of the program whenever you want to online. It's been a couple weeks since I've had the opportunity to be with you due to a few factors. The Bulldog baseball team, which will be playing later tonight against Arizona State. The National Spelling Bee, I was in Washington, D.C. for a while, and some family circumstances, too. But I'm glad to be back with you today. Looking forward to the program. We'll chat with David Aguilar, a World War II veteran who saw action at the Battle of the Bulge and has some very entertaining stories to share with us before the day is done. Also, I hope that you noted on Friday the 64th anniversary of one of the most remarkable days in modern history, D-Day, June 6, 1944. That was Friday, of course, was the 64th anniversary. We owe so much to the men who put their lives on the line that day back on the shores of Normandy. So much valor and bravery on display there, and we're forever indebted to those men and all of the men and women who wear our uniform to preserve our freedom in this country. Also, this is the first chance I've had to be with you since the Heroes of the Valley fundraiser for the Veterans Memorial Museum in downtown Fresno. I wanted to give you a little bit of an update about how that went. They raised close to $10,000 and hope to continue raising money throughout the year. And perhaps most notably, the very next day after that fundraiser, which was on May 25th, they had the biggest crowd that the volunteers down at the museum can remember. More than 400 people showed up the next day to take a free tour of the museum. So I hope that if you weren't one of those 400, you'll get a chance to go to downtown Fresno to visit what is really a treasure for our valley. So much history on display there, and living history in the docents and volunteers who will lead you around that museum. It's open from 10 to 3, Monday through Saturday, and admission is always free. So support the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor. Thanks to the folks who put on that Heroes of the Valley fundraiser. And since that time, we've lost a couple of the veterans who were honored at that Heroes of the Valley fundraiser. Roy Segrist, a P-38 pilot from Chowchilla, who I had the opportunity to interview, and a phenomenal man who shared some of his stories with us. I'm honored to have had the chance to do that. And also another veteran who really is the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing and trying to honor the veterans of World War II. So to give you a little taste of him, here is an interview that I had a chance to do on television a couple years ago, and I'll talk more about this veteran after you give this a little listen.
The one that the general pinned on me.
We found that silver star stashed away in a dresser drawer. Like many of his generation, Dr. Robert Leppler is humble about his service to our country.
I'm not the guy that wants to go bragging about it.
The military experience for Dr. Leppler began after he graduated from medical school at the University of Illinois in 1940.
Didn't have any money, and I thought the best thing to do was get into the Army. And this was before Pearl Harbor. So I went to apply, and they said I was 56 pounds over the maximum they would take.
Seeing no other options, he starved himself, and every day walked the 15-mile trip home from the hospital where he was interning.
After I lost 40 pounds, they said, don't lose it anymore, we'll take you. And so I starved to get into the service.
Serving a battalion surgeon attached to the 6th Armored Division, the young doctor landed in France, D-Day plus 30.
At a place called Pont-Arson. That's a bridge of some kind. The Germans let the first part of the column go by and then hit the next one and then hit some back, and then they could pick off the tanks and half tracks along the way.
In the midst of a fierce firefight, he pulled 26 men out of burning tanks and half tracks, taking his Jeep back in four times.
The commander was running this way and I was going that way back in the fire. Yeah, I could hear the muzzle blast of the 88 before I heard the impact.
That means he was as close as 400 to 500 yards from the German guns, but somehow escaped unharmed, maybe because of the cross on his helmet.
One of the guys that was captured by this same group, he said they were trying to miss me. And they did, thank God.
And what were you thinking as you were doing that?
I wasn't thinking. I was just doing.
That same approach helped him earn a Bronze Star during the Battle of the Bulge, when he again braved enemy fire to relieve a shell-shocked surgeon.
The war did have some lighter moments. When their divisions crossed paths, he got to meet up with his younger brother, Harry. And later, he had a brief encounter with General George S. Patton.
I asked him if I could take his picture, and so he said, sure.
That photo is now in a museum in Germany, but the images etched in Dr. Leffler's memory include the lasting horror of a Nazi death camp when his division liberated Buchenwald, and the sight of brave young men gunned down in the prime of life.
And I can remember with two holes in his helmet.
Ask him about what changed after VE Day, and his mind jumps to a small church in Germany.
There was a sign in the church. It said, Luftschutz Raum im Sommer. That means the air raid shelter is in the sun.
During the war, a dentist friend had helped him find a beautiful fiancée. So when he got back, they got married. Before moving to Fresno, Bob and Betty celebrated more than 60 anniversaries in Los Banos, where his medical practice specialized in arthritis treatment. It turned into a pretty happy ending for a guy who didn't foresee much of a future when he headed off to war.
I was pretty sure I was going to get to.
Well, I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, you wouldn't be around.
No, I wouldn't be around. I would have never been born because Dr. Leffler is my grandfather. He was the best man in my wedding, and for good reason. He's the best man I know.
My grandfather passed away on May 21st. We'll have a ceremony to honor his legacy in Los Banos on June 16th. And I appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit of a taste of him with you today. His Army buddies back in World War II knew him as the Smiling Doc. And he had a very infectious smile, a love for life, and really just a love for people. So those who have seen the TV story often comment to me about it and tell me that I bear a significant resemblance to him physically. And my feeling on that is that if I can look back decades down the road and have it said that my character and my life resembled his as well, then I'll be a very happy man. So thank you for letting me share that with you today. And thanks, Gramps, for setting such a positive example for me and everyone else who knew you. Okay, we're going to move on from that and talk to another veteran, like my grandfather, who was at the Battle of the Bulge. Froze his rear end off at the Battle of the Bulge and lived to tell about it. Has some very entertaining stories to tell to us today. And I look forward to visiting with David Aguilar when Hometown Heroes continues on News Talk 580 KMJ.
As a busy executive, it wasn't until I started flying nonstop on ExpressJet Airlines that I found the time to take a stroll around the old workspace and appreciate the wonders that are the modern office. I mean, take this fax machine, for example. Totally awesome! Or this paper shredder. What's this? An electric stapler? Boy, what will they think of next? You know, if it weren't for the time I save with ExpressJet Airlines, I wouldn't be able to enjoy all this cool stuff. Ooh, what's this?
Welcome to an airline that measures travel satisfaction and the time it saves you. Because we know there are things you'd rather be doing than flying.
Hey, Steve, what am I cutting here anyway?
I believe that's payroll, sir.
This is fantastic! Look, Steve, I'm making salary cuts! Get it?
Not really.
Non-stop flights on ExpressJet Airlines. What are you waiting for?
Fly ExpressJet Airlines non-stop from Fresno to L.A., Ontario, Long Beach, and San Diego while enjoying free XM radio. Go to ExpressJet.com to book your flight today.
Meet Robo, the walking, talking robot.
How are you?
When it comes to data, Robo's brilliant. But when it comes to dating, not so much.
Your perfume reminds me of an inverse fraction.
That's why there's Cupid.com.
I believe your circuits are designed very well. Yeah.
Here, it's a little less about the data and more about the dating. We're Cupid.com, and we're all about meeting people that live in your area and letting you decide who's right for you.
Would you like to reboot tonight?
So log on to Cupid.com. And don't worry, we're not going to ask you hundreds of questions about your personality. We just want to help you meet people. People that live in your area and let you decide who's right for you.
Wow, I'm falling in love with your derivative.
We're Cupid.com. Why not log on and start meeting people today?
Yeah.
Because sometimes love is closer than you think.
How are you?
Cupid.com. In the month of June, Comcast is having the biggest video sale of the year. Sign up for Comcast Cable with On Demand for only $19.99 a month until the end of the year. When you sign up with Comcast Cable with On Demand, you will receive hundreds of channels of the most requested programs.
programming. Also, you will enjoy On Demand with tons of shows, movies, and music videos that are available whenever you are. And the majority of them are free. On Demand is only available with Comcast Cable. You won't find this on satellite. So hurry. Call 1-800-COMCAST and sign up now. Certain restrictions. Service not available in all areas.
Kelly Shields is a real Californian providing real hope.
A few years ago, things were good. You know, living the American dream. But this year wasn't going as well. Turns out we had an adjustable rate loan. All of a sudden, I thought we'd lose everything. We qualified for help and got to keep our home. It could work for you, too.
If you find yourself in a situation like Kelly, there's hope. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit yourhome.ca.gov to learn more. This message is brought to you by the State of California, aired by the California Broadcasters.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes on this Sunday afternoon. I'm Paul Leffler with you. If you have a World War II veteran in your life that you'd like to tell me about, someone you think we ought to feature on this program, you can email me at paul@kmj580.com. That's paul@kmj580.com. Love to hear from you, and I'm excited today to have a chance to visit with David Aguilar, who you would never believe him when he tells you how old he is, because he just doesn't act his age, and I don't know if he's ever going to start acting his age. But when he was the age of 18 years old, Uncle Sam came calling. Dave, first of all, thanks for being here. Tell us how you ended up serving our country.
Well, I got a little, in the mail, I got a little invitation, a greeting from a president, and I told my family, this means I'm going in the service.
And you were living in Merced at the time, is that right?
I was living in Merced at the time. And from there, when I got my little invitation, I had to go report to Fresno, the induction center there, and there's where it started. Got the doctor to examine me and everything else. But at that time, I weighed 103 pounds. And they said, no, I didn't have the weight. So he told me to go over to the drinking fountain, drink some water to gain a little extra pounds so he can make me go. So I did that.
Well, we were just listening in the last segment to my late grandfather talking about how he had to lose weight to get into the service. You had to put a little weight on, and it was all water weight, huh?
Yeah, I had to put a little weight on. So I did that, and next thing I know, I was taking training in Monterey. Took some training there. And then from there, they sent me to Texas. And took some more training there, and while I was there, I didn't know that that was a tank battalion there, and so the sergeant called us out, a whole bunch of us out, and started asking us who can drive a truck, pickup, or whatever, or a tractor, Caterpillar, and those that did, well, I would take one step forward, and I did. And
because you had grown up on a farm.
Because I was raised on a farm, I was a country boy.
So you knew how to drive a tractor.
So I knew all those things, so that came kind of easy to me, but I didn't know what I was getting into, but I did. I took that step forward, and then there's where I got a tank, 33 tons of steel, and when I saw that big monster, I was scared. I ain't going to fib about it. I was scared because it was awfully big.
Well, and I understand the biggest challenge with a big Sherman tank like that, as you said, 33 tons of steel. There's no brakes, right?
There's no brakes on that. The only way to slow down that huge thing was shift down the lower gears, and that was the only way. You just, if you got it, it had five gears, five speeds. So when you're going full speed five gears, why then you go down from five to four and four to three and three to two and down to one, and you can bring it to a stop because it was heavy, and it, when it comes to a stop, it's so heavy it kind of rocked a little bit. That means you're dead stop. Anyway, I got acquainted with the tank, and the sergeant took me out on a little run, and we came back, and he said, Aguilar, that 33 ton of steel is yours. And
not a bad price for an 18-year-old kid, huh?
Yeah, really. But I got used to it as the days went by. I got used to it. It became kind of a kind of a toy with me, because I can handle it pretty easy. The more I drove it, the easier it got. Then I met my assistant. He was quite a big guy. He was I think he weighed about around 190 pounds.
He didn't have to drink any extra water to get in.
No, he had his weight. But the only thing he had problem with is getting into the tank. The other area, it's awfully small there. And I was comfortable because I fit real good, but he didn't. He had to struggle and get in his seat and put the mics on, and we would go out and got acquainted. We both were taught to maintenance a tank. I think it was three oil filters on each side, and they were huge. They were about 14 inches high and about 6 inches in diameter. But we had to clean those now and then. That was very important to maintain that tank. And they taught us the main parts of that tank to keep it going. And the other part is the commander of the tank, why he was the one that was in charge of, he had one man, one gunner, an assistant gunner, and the radio man. So there was, three, four, six of us in there, and we had to squeeze in there, but each one had a job to do, and that's what we concentrated on.
So you thought that you'd be driving a tank when you went overseas?
That was my feeling. I thought I was going to be in a tank battalion. It was a 647, and the other one was a 648. There were two tank battalions that were there, and I thought that's what I was going to do. Well, I went home, got a little furlough, and went home. And when I came back to Texas, there was nobody there. And I said, "What's going on here? Where are we? What are we doing?" He said, "Just hang around here till we get enough guys to put you on a train, and we're going to ship you to Mississippi." And that's all they told us. I said, "Well, we're all trying to guess what the heck we're going to do." Don't worry about it. We got tank training. That's what we're going to do. Well, we waited about 3-4 days and got enough guys, and here we go on the train to it was Mississippi and Tennessee and Kentucky, those three states. We got there. We got a surprise. They gave us some infantry training. No tanks nowhere around. And I said, "Well, okay." So we took the more training. That's where I took machine gun training, BAR training. BAR, I couldn't handle it. I was not big enough. I didn't have enough weight to control it. But the sergeant said, "You go sideways. You want to go to your right, turn it to the right, and it'll go right. Pull the trigger, and automatically it will swing right or left." It's okay, but I couldn't hold it down. So that's what I had to do. But it was pretty good, and I had another one called them a grease gun, which is a little automatic short thing, looked like a grease gun, and that really was pretty easy to handle. And then they took us back, and we were idle. I passed everything, all the tests and all. Then they said, "Well, we need some drivers to drive a command car." Well, what's a command car? Well, I didn't know, but I got a Mercury. I think it was a 42 Mercury or something like that. And then he said, "You're going to be driving for Mayor Yoakum. You're going to be taking him into Tennessee and Kentucky because that's where they're holding maneuvers." Okay, that's fine. I drove him, and they taught me how when the mayor got there, what you're supposed to do. You open the door and you got to dress clean, neat, sharp, well-shaven, and the greeting is all different. You had to be pretty sharp, and so I did that. I passed everything, and I did that for about a month and a half. And then they took that away from us, and we were back at camp. And from there, they gave us some more small army details and what to do, training, and we waited for another 4 or 5 weeks, and we got a call to go overseas. And they packed us with everything they could put through us in our body. We had packs we had to carry. I think we was carrying around 120 pounds.
And you didn't even weigh 120 pounds.
I didn't weigh no 120 pounds. Well, anyway, one thing led to another. We shipped out of New York, and it was at night, and everybody they crammed us in that big boat, big liner, and it took us 8 days across the ocean into England. And we landed in Southampton. And there they took everything away from us, but certain things that we needed to take to the troops in France that we didn't know. We were doing that, but anyway, they told us what to take across with us. Put us in another boat, smaller boat, and that had rope ladders. They took us across the channel into France, Omaha Beach, and he said, you get down on the rope ladder, down into the landing barges, and we'll load us up there, about 60 of us. And the guy that ran the boat, he just headed out to shore, and he got as far as about maybe 20 feet or less. He said, you guys have to jump. Well, the water was waist high. Everything got wet, so make sure your weapon don't get wet, but everything else, yeah. Okay, we got to the beach, and we got there, and then we started this. Well, we got us all lined up on each side of the country road out there going up the Omaha Beach there, and we went, maybe about 6 miles. Seemed like 6 miles, but it wasn't that far.
And this was less than 2 weeks after D-Day, right?
Yeah.
12 days after
D-Day.
And from all the guys that I've talked to who were there shortly after that initial invasion, June 6th, which we just celebrated the 64th anniversary.
Yeah, right.
They all still saw some of the aftermath. Maybe if they didn't even see it, they certainly smelled it, and I think that was the experience you had, too.
That's the experience I ran to when I got to the top of that long climb, and it was a different, there was bushes and trees and what have you, more like a countryside, you know, and there was a smell that it was terrible. We all was asking each other, facing each other, what in the world is that? Well, somebody said, look up at the trees. We looked up at trees, and we saw paratroopers hung up there that the quartermaster had got to them, and that was the smell, dead bodies. They haven't got to them. Anyway, we just put our hands over and put our whatever we had with us over our face to get that smell, not the smell of it, but it was terrible. It was, I don't particularly care to smell it again. I know what it is.
I don't blame you.
If I ever come close to it, I know what it is. I'm going the other way.
And I imagine that mentally, that makes an impression on you, too. I mean, here you are, you just got across the channel, you're coming into a war zone, and if you weren't aware of that already, when you catch that smell and see what it is, it probably hits you.
Oh, it hit me all right. It just, your mind starts wondering what's what, you know, and I said, well, we must be getting close to where we're supposed to be. And we kept going, they load us in trucks, and here we go, it looked like a jungle, and here we go, zigzag the country roads out there, and hedgerows all over, and we finally got to our destination, and we got off the trucks, and we waited another 15, 20 minutes, or maybe more, and they said, you go this way, you go this way, you go this way, you go this way, and here we go, and the sergeant would take us, maybe about 12 of us, or 14 or whatever, maybe 20. Here we go, and we got to our destination. With the closer we got to where we were going, you can hear the artillery, and you can hear the firing, and as, oh boy, here we go. Anyway, it was, the bullets weren't coming around near us, but I could tell the sound as, oh boy, what's this?
Let me stop you right there, because we need to catch a commercial break. So when we come back, we'll hear about that first taste of combat and what it did feel like when the bullets were coming close to you, when you had to fire back a little bit. David Aguilar, World War II veteran of the 2nd Infantry Division, is with us today. We'll be right back with more Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Ready, set,
on 580 KMJ, this is a WAC Commissioner's Cup report on Fresno State Athletics.
The Fresno State Women Golf Program began in 2004, and the person picked to lead the team was Angie Cates, a 1998 graduate of Washington State. In 2005, Cates was named the WAC Coach of the Year after guiding the Bulldogs to two tournament titles as a first-year program. That same year, Cates coached then-freshman Laura Luthke to three individual tournament titles and a sixth-place finish in the NCAA Western Regional. In 2008, Cates guided the four-year program to its first-ever WAC tournament title and an automatic berth into the NCAA tournament. In the West Regionals in Sacramento, the Dogs finished 18th, concluding the program's most successful season under Cates. Before joining the Bulldogs, Cates worked as an assistant coach for both the men's and women's golf teams at Oregon State. A native of Dallas, Cates golfed at Washington State and was an All-American Scholar Athlete three times.
For complete coverage of Fresno State sports, it's News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com.
Remember that music? The late, great Glenn Miller in String of Pearls, one of Dave Aguilar's favorites decades ago. I think it's still one of his favorites. David Aguilar, World War II veteran, our guest today here on Hometown Heroes. When we left off, he had gotten overseas, landed on Omaha Beach 12 days after the Allied invasion. You heard him describe that stench of decaying bodies that gave him a very real taste of what war was going to be all about, and before long he would experience that himself. Dave, what was your first taste of combat, and how nervous were you the night before?
Well, my first combat was in St. Lo.
Mm-hmm.
There,
the
and
I
was towed in, and the sergeant said, "Your squad leader, this is your squad leader," and so forth. And he said, "Well, we're going to start you with an M1, so okay." So there we go. He says, "You do exactly what I say." Okay, the squad leader was Sergeant Garza, and I think the armor was his assistant. And actually, his assistant, the armor was the one that kind of told me where to go and what to do. So he says, "You, Aguilar, so you hang back close to me, and they'll let the other guys go ahead with more experience, and you get back here with me." I said, okay. So I went there, and as we, it took us about 3 miles to get into where you got rifle firing and so forth. But in the meantime, we're getting artillery. I got to know the Germans' 88s. They were, when they went off, if you heard it, it is going to come to you, near you. But if you heard it, oh, wait a minute, let me get this right. If you heard it, it's not going to be near you. But if you don't hear it, it's going to come awfully close to you. That's the first thing I learned about
it. Compared to when you see it.
Yeah.
And how far there is between when you see it and when you hear it.
They're sure. Pretty far back, but you can hear it when it goes off. Anyway, that's what I learned quick. And when you don't hear nothing, you better duck or find, look for something to hide. But if you hear it coming, don't worry about it. Okay, so we had my experience. We went in through there, and I was hanging back. Not too far back, maybe 100 yards or so. And then the Germans would hightail it, and they were gone. So but we got the order to take that hill, St. Lo, and we took it with everybody around us, different companies and what have you. And we held, they told us to hold there, and when we held there, the next thing we do is about 2 o'clock in the morning, they said, "Well, we'll get ready. We're going to advance." Well, long and behold, the next place was Brest, France, which was a town by the shore, by the ocean. So that was a toughie, because I think everybody that was in that battle there, well, everybody surrounded that city, and long and behold, the Germans were well dug in there. They must have had a four-story dug in there, because they had nurses and they had everything, and they had enough stuff, equipment, everything else to fight for 6 months. But the pounding from the naval ships from the ocean, from the sea there, and the artillery and then the airplanes bombing it, because we were not with the, we stayed back where we were safe from our own artillery and stuff. The pounding 24 hours a day is what caused them Germans to give up.
Right.
It took about 3-4 days, and they, I was amazed, and lucky at the same time, because we didn't have to do any more fighting there. They gave up. And I was high enough ground that I could see the main road rig coming out of the Brest to the our side was, that I think they were about 12 abreast or something like that. They just was just a whole lot of Germans coming out of there, but they, none officers led the surrender. They came out first, and then the nurses, and then the soldiers, the battle, the fighting soldiers came back. But it was, took like forever to come to an end, but they captured all of them. And then, of course, I wasn't involved in that. We just stood by and watched. And the next few days, why, then we were pulled back, and that's when they gave us new equipment, and we headed for Germany.
And I hear they were, you know, I've heard so many veterans tell me the first rule of being in the Army, never volunteer for anything. But I don't think you followed that rule.
No, that was not my rule. I watched, my eyes were everywhere, and I made my decisions were wrong or right, but I think they were right because I came back.
You're still here. You're here talking about it. And somewhere along the time that you were just talking about, didn't they ask for volunteers for bazookas?
Well, that was in St. Lo.
Uh-huh.
Because they called us, the Army says, have you ever had training in bazookas? No. I said, well, we lost our bazooka man. How you feel? I said, well, I don't know. I've never had any training on that. I said, well, let me get one. So he pulled it out, and it was just a big stovepipe to me. And I said, okay, how do you do this? Well, it's run by batteries and blah, 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 and you got an assistant. He puts a round in there, and he's got a little wire right there by your right ear, and he winds that up, and he pats you on the shoulder. That means he's done his part, and you do the aiming and adjusting the length of the distance, what target you got. I said, okay, here we go.
You did hear the part that the reason they needed one is because the last guy got killed, right?
He got killed.
That didn't faze you at all?
No, it didn't. It didn't, because in the meantime, while I was there, I had asked, I was full of questions. I asked, I said, well, where's, how long did this, and oh, we lose them, though, right and left. We don't know. If they're gone, we don't know where they're at, whether they're just got scared and ran back or what. So I never got a true answer. But anyway, I had to look and observe, keep my eyes open and ears so I can learn what's going around me. So I put two together, and I followed my instincts and so forth.
You didn't get a whole lot of training on it probably either.
No, I got the real training I got there. Real action.
Uh-huh, that's the best training there is. Just do it.
But I didn't realize that you had to get so close. That bazooka didn't have long distance accuracy or nothing. You had to crawl and use every bush or tree or whatever for protection. And you got there, and then you had to shoot, measure the distance, and you had to get acquainted with it. And sometimes I was accurate, sometimes I was not. So when I thought that I always shot an HP. That was, an HE would hit anything and it would explode. AP would be armor piercing.
Right.
That would pierce in, so that I wouldn't use too much of that. HE is what I was using mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got back into Germany. But while I was fighting in France, I never used the HE as an AP.
And you figured out somewhere along the line that there was another method instead of just trying to hit something on the fly with that shell, that you improvised something that skipping rocks on the river growing up kind of helped you with?
Well, that was when I was in Germany.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I was already in the Battle of the Bulge, we had our taste there, and we had a lot of snow.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, well, and then we had a lot of ice on the ground, too. It's hard, you know, you freeze and all that. So the water ran through my mind. I said, gee, I don't have to get so close. I can just, what came back into my mind is when I was a youngster, I'd throw flat rocks on the water and they would skip.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, why can't I use it here? So I did that, and I was amazed how far that darn shell would skip on the snow and the hard ice to get there. And I said, oh, okay. So I got one occasion where there was a machine gun, and I got to a little high ground where I could be using the slope and bounce, let that thing bounce, my round bounce into the my target. So I did that, and they got there, and I used HE, and when it got there, whatever it hit, it was going to explode, and they got that machine gun. But where I used AP is when I had to get to a tank. Now, that was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you could use something, a building, to ricochet, too.
Right.
You know, you could use a tree also to ricochet, but you had to be pretty accurate.
I would imagine so.
Yeah, you had to be pretty accurate, which I didn't do too much of that. Maybe I used it on a building, or I remember one time I used it on, it was like a little, maybe it was a pillbox, I don't know. It was made out of concrete, and I hit the side of that to ricochet and go wherever it went, where the enemy was, but I didn't know whether I did some damage or not.
And you kind of applied that same strategy years later to your golf game, right? Just let it skip along the ice?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah, that's very true.
All joking aside, the Battle of the Bulge was no picnic. And you talk about skipping a bazooka shell on the ice, but first of all, you had to survive those conditions, and I don't think you were digging a foxhole in that kind of concrete-like ice.
No, I'll tell you, Germany was a lot of cold, a lot of snow. I guess there was snow. You take a step into that snow, and you go knee-deep. And sometimes we go to maybe 3, 4, 5 miles to get to our destination, and in between there, I mean, you got so tired that you just lay on top of that snow, and you didn't care whether you got killed or not. You were so tired. Well, anyway, you'd rest a little bit, and you had orders, hey, get up, let's go, fellas, come on, let's go. And you get up, and there you go again. I was throwing things I knew that I didn't need.
Mm-hmm.
I threw him on the left of mare. I just carried my bazooka. And before that, I got to where I asked my lieutenant. See, the only ones that are required to wear a pistol, .45, was the sergeants on up. And I told Lieutenant, I said, Lieutenant Donnelly, I says, I keep losing my M1, and then they gave me a 30, and I can't keep that with me. How about a .45? I said, we can't give you a .45. We can't let you have that. I said, well, that's about the easiest thing I can have so I can defend myself. I said, well, keep it under your hat, so I'm going to give you one. He gave it to me, and I had it real covered. I always had a little windbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
I had that folded, and I'd have that right over my .45, so the guys couldn't see what I had under there. And if they did ask me what I got under there, I said, oh, that's my aid kit. You know, I'd lie to him, or my canteen.
That wasn't too much of a stretch. It might have to come to your aid at some point.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the question. Did you ever have to use it?
No. Never got to use it.
But it made you feel a little better knowing it was there.
It made me feel better because I could pull it out. I did pull it out one time. There was a little town, Leipzig. That's where I got my finger. I got a strap on my finger. That was our last battle in Leipzig, Germany. That was towards the end of... just before you, maybe 2-3 days before you get into Czechoslovakia. That was our last big battle. And I remember me crossing one river, and they called for a bazooka. I says, Aguilar, get your bazooka up here. And it was kind of an arch. The bridge, the road was kind of an arch, like, I guess, to keep it from falling, I guess. But it had a lot of metals. Brackets on there, so I just hugged the edge of the frame of the bridge for protection.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got to where I said, what am I supposed to shoot at? Well, the enemy's over there. I says, yeah, that's 2-3 blocks.
Hold that thought right there, because we need to get this last commercial break in. But we want to pick it up right at that point. What did Dave have to do from that point, and what happened for the rest of the war? What's he been up to since, and how does he continue to honor our country each and every day of his life? We'll hopefully have time to answer all of those questions when Hometown Heroes comes down the hometown, the home stretch straight ahead on News Talk 580 KMJ.
It's time to tee it up and think green as the Greater Fresno Area Chamber of Commerce and Fashion Fair Ball, in association with Table Mountain Casino, present the inaugural Chamber Golf Tournament Thursday, June the 19th. Spend the day swinging your clubs on the green at the beautiful Brighton Crest Golf Course, and then enjoy a delicious dinner afterwards provided by BJ's Restaurant. You can win your share of over $5,000 in high-end golf equipment and raffle prizes. Plus, six teams will take home top awards. Everyone is a winner. The weather is perfect. The time is always right for a great game of golf. Sponsorships are available by calling the Fresno Chamber or log on to FresnoChamber.com. Your help is needed to make this inaugural golf tournament an annual golf tournament for the Greater Fresno Area Chamber of Commerce. We're thinking green. Aren't you?
Special thanks to Fashion Fair Mall, Table Mountain Casino, BJ's Restaurant, and Lexus for their Win a New Lexus hole-in-one sponsorship. For more information, log on to FresnoChamber.com.
Table Mountain Casino presents the KMJ Rock and Roll 2008.
Saturday, June 14th at Fresno's historic Kearney Park.
Classic rock and roll and hundreds of classic cars and street rods featuring Big Brother and the Holding Company. George Thorogood and the Destroyers. And the immortal, legendary Little Richard. Available at the gate only and are just $10. Under 12, admitted free. Gates open at 11. And brand new this year, a kids' carnival with lots of rides. Mark your calendars for Saturday, June 14th, as things crank up. The KMJ Rock and Rod 2008, Kearney Park, Fresno.
Also brought to you by Diablo Motorsports, Comcast, and Miller Lite.
Details at KMJ580.com.
In the past, when you wanted concrete curbing around your property, you had to call a contractor who may or may not have wanted to do a small residential job like curbing around lawns, flower beds, and trees. After serving in Iraq, David Patterson started a small company called Valley Curb. With the help of his machine called Little Bubba, they can extrude many different shapes and sizes of curbing. Curbing by Valley Curb is decorative as well as functional. Curbing helps keep that unwanted grass out of your flower beds. It retains your bedding material, which reduces weed growth and helps conserve water. It can also be colored and stamped in a way that really incorporates your home with your landscape. So when you need concrete curbing around your house, call David Patterson at Valley Curb at 1-866-441-CURB or visit his website at valleycurb.com. Remember, for residential landscape curbing, call David Patterson and let him bring Little Bubba over to your house. Call Valley Curb at 866-441-CURB or call information for the number to Valley Curb. License 864846.
SEOP is your key to getting more internet sales. The moment this commercial's over, search for your product or service on Google, MSN, and Yahoo. If your website isn't listed in the top 10, your business is losing a fortune. SEOP is the key if you want to know how to drive more business and higher profits through internet sales. It's all about having your website highly ranked. And if you don't rank in the top 10 on Google, Yahoo, and MSN, then you're losing a fortune every day. Whether you're a Fortune 100 company or a startup, SEOP will drive more business to your website than you ever imagined. And how's this for confidence? SEOP guarantees you'll be ranked in the top 10 on search engines, or they'll keep working until you get there at no cost. For free information on how SEOP will rank you in the top 10, call 800-819-8469. That's 800-819-8469. 800-819-8469.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. The time always goes by way too quickly, and that's the case again today with David Aguilar, who left us when we were last speaking, talking about Leipzig, Germany, a battle there, and he had approached a bridge and was hugging the edge of that bridge to try to preserve some kind of protection as he carried his bazooka. And pick it up from there, Dave. What happened to you after that?
Well, the 69th was to our right, and when we crossed the river, well, they told us to hold there because the 69th has had got the Germans on the run, so there was nothing for us. So we held there, and while we were there, we went back to one of the buildings, and there was a German officer, and he talked to the sergeant, said that the war was ended. The war was ended for him. He didn't see anything any worthwhile living for. He said that he wanted to end his life right there. So we didn't know what the heck, whether he was serious or what. But the sergeant pulled his 45, Sergeant Scarborough. He got his 45 and took all the shells but one. And the rest of us, there was about four of us around this officer, maybe about 6-7 feet away from him, and we had our weapons aiming at him just in case he aimed at one of us. And he just clicked his boots and said, "Hi, Hitler," and put the 5 to his temple and shot him, and then he fell to the floor there, and he started quivering, and I saw the spot where the bullet went in, a little dark spot, smoky black. I couldn't see the other side, but then he quit quivering, and that was it.
I imagine on a human level, even though he was the enemy, that had to be hard to watch.
Well, it was really hard. I couldn't believe my eyes. I was maybe in shock. I couldn't believe it. But after a few minutes, why, everybody started going away, and I saw the sword. I don't know what made me go for it. I grabbed the sword, and I kept that sword, and I sent it home by different parts, and that's how I got it home. If I had sent it in one piece, it would have never got home.
You were thinking ahead.
I still have
that sword.
I had experience already. I'm not getting home.
You still have that sword with his name on it.
I still have that sword with his name on the on the top part of it.
That's
it's beautiful, but it's I kept it in scabbard there, but it's in good condition. His name's on it. And he's got I forget his name right now, but his name is on there.
I think it was Mueller, wasn't it?
Mueller, yeah. It sounds like a Mueller.
I've seen that sword, and it is in good condition.
Yeah, Mueller.
And one thing you don't have anymore is your helmet. Now, you covered from the time you hit the shores at Omaha Beach to the time you stopped moving in Czechoslovakia, 1,750 miles. That is incredible.
That's how many miles.
And in Czechoslovakia, you left behind your helmet?
Yeah, a little boy about 10 years old. Well, he's 10. He followed me, kept following me, and the guy kept saying, "Aguilar," says, "What's the boy doing following you? He's yours?" And they start kidding me. I said, "I don't know what he wants." And somebody knew how to talk Czech or German or something. And he said, "Dave, he wants your Aguilar. He wants your helmet." So I took my helmet, steel helmet, not the liner, steel helmet, and gave it to him. He put it on. He was right there with me. Back along. And right now, I estimate he's about 77 years old. If he's alive.
That would be something to find him. And you have a picture.
I have a picture of
this young boy who probably said, "Děkuji mockrát," which means thank you many times in Czech. And that's a darling picture of you and the little boy wearing your helmet. And I think it's a great illustration of what that people felt and thanks that people had for you guys for liberating them at that point. I know we're getting short on time here, but we haven't talked about really any close calls, and I know you had some extreme circumstances at the Battle of the Bulge. You saw the early stages of it, then after you're pushed back, you came back through and saw the aftermath and all the devastation, the destruction, all the fir trees that had been standing there before were now gone. You moved on through all of that and through Leipzig, and from what you've told me, one of your closest calls came in a spot where there really wasn't any combat going on. Tell me about this tower where you found the machine gun on top.
Well, that was after Leipzig. That was maybe halfway between there and Czechoslovakia where we ended our fighting. They told us to go to this ammunition dump and guard it. Well, there they had a 4-story lookout.
Mm-hmm.
And the sergeant said, "Aguilar, go check that out." Said, "Okay," so I took the stairs all the way up there, and no windows because there was no glass there. And I got to the very top, and I could see all the way around. And I turned around, and I saw a German machine gun. I said, "Well," and I checked it real carefully, see if there's any wires or any booby traps there, and there was nothing. So I said, "Well, here goes." So I sat down there and put my feet on the tripod legs, and I squeezed the butterflies, and boy, it gave a burp, burp, and all that. And the guys didn't know I was up there, and they started shooting up there. And I hollered down there. I said, "This is Aguilar, quit shooting." So that was my close call. Bullets were flying up there, but lucky again, I didn't get hit. Oh, God.
So you almost got yourself killed just trying to have a little fun.
That was a close one. Yeah.
And that is a great story. And I know that after the war was over, you had a chance to, like so many veterans, march in a victory parade in San Francisco. And you haven't stopped marching since. You continue to march here in Fresno
I have parades every year.
The Veterans Day Parade, one of the largest in the country, the largest west of the Mississippi. And how often are you working now with the VFW Honor Guard?
The Honor Guard, sometimes we're very busy, maybe five times a week, two times a week. It all depends.
You're presiding over services for veterans who have passed on? That's most of your work?
Mostly. Any veteran that has a uniform, we do the full honors for them. It's the people, if you want a full honor guards, we do the whole thing, the firing and the folding of flag and the taps and the fallen comrade, which we do. And
what do you get out of that? Why do you do that?
It's the feeling that I get in myself to the last rites for any soldier. And I do the folding of the flag.
Another thing I need to squeeze in, we've got about a minute left, and I feel like I'm squeezing something in I should have gotten to a long time ago. You had to wait more than 55 years to get your medals.
I waited, 60 years to get my medals. By the way, I got my Bronze Star in the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
I saved my squad leader. He fired. We were pinned down, and he got a hold of an M1 and started firing. And when he did, I got up too, and then he went down and got the BAR, start firing, and he got hit on his left breast, and two bullets came out of his armpit, and I didn't know he was hit, but he was a tall man, about 80 pounds, and I'm only 5'5" and weighed 120 pounds probably. And I carried him on my back. I said, I can't pick you up. I said, just get on my shoulder. Lean on my shoulders. I dragged him about 20 feet. And then another sergeant came by and helped me. And then the medic came and he took him. And that's how I got my Bronze Star.
Well, I'm glad you finally told me about that. And I'm sorry that I waited so long to get to that. But he did finally get that Bronze Star 6 decades later. And, David, we're very proud of what you've done for our country. Thank you for your service to our country then and the service you continue to provide for our veterans now. I'm sorry that we're out of time. I wish we had a little more time to talk about it. But thanks so much for being here today.
It's an honor to do this for my country.
Amen. That's David Aguilar, our guest today. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes. Join us again next week on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Tag Heuer presents Jeff Gordon.
What am I made of? I'm a 4-time NASCAR champion and a 1st-time father. I am the hunger to win my next title. I am grateful for what I can do behind the wheel and thankful for what I can give back when I'm not. I am the embodiment of 4 simple words. Gentlemen, start your engines. What am I made of? Whatever lies around the next turn. And you know I'll be the first one to get there. My name is Jeff Gordon, and I wear Tag Heuer. What are you made of?
Tag Heuer timepieces. Swiss avant-garde since 1860. To discover your Tag Heuer timepiece, visit tagheuer.com for an authorized retailer in your area.
Starting this Friday for 3 days only, Herb Bauer Sporting Goods is having a Ruger sale. If you need additional home security, a hunting handgun, a target pistol, a new varmint rifle, or you're into cowboy action shooting, go to Herb Bauer's this weekend. All Ruger handguns, rifles, and shotguns in stock are 20% off. Herb Bauer has over 170 Ruger firearms to choose from. These are new American-made firearms, and Herb Bauer has Ruger's new models available during this sale. Again, all Ruger firearms in stock are discounted 20% off retail, and used long guns are discounted 30% off this weekend. Secure your valuables and firearms with a high-quality Browning gun safe at 20% off. Herb Bowers has the largest selection of guns, hunting clothing, and hunting accessories in the valley. Don't miss the 20% off Ruger firearms, used guns, and Browning safe sale this weekend at Herb Bowers Sporting Goods in Fresno on Blackstone, south of Sierra. Herb Bowers, there's no other sports store like it.
The official 50,000-watt information, weather, and traffic leader.
Pete Broadcasting's News Talk 580.
KMJ Fresno.
The news starts now.